And welcome to Open Sources Guelph here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. I am Pro Adam A. Donaldson of Guelph Politico, and joining me is...
And I'm Pro Adam A. Donaldson as well. No. Scotty Hertz here, blinking a little bit. I followed Trump's lead and looked at the eclipse, but no. I did not. I know since that was our title this week on the mail out.
Oh, man.
The mail out? Do you still say that?
Sure.
Another information for the show. Anyway, no, I did not look at the eclipse, and don't you dare do it either. So.
I'm glad we got that warning out early for 2024. Open Sources is CFRU's political and current affairs discussion show, and you can listen to us live here on CFRU every Thursday at 5 p.m. You can also listen to us live online. Go to CFRU.ca and click on the Listen Now icon at the top right-hand corner of your screen, and you can listen to us anytime by downloading the Open Sources podcast on Podbean, iTunes, or Stitcher. Today, we will talk about dual but not unrelated issues in Quebec, the tremendous influx of Haitian refugees from the U.S., and last weekend's march by La Mouette, showing Quebec's own ugly alt-right movement. We'll look at how the one might be feeding into the other and what the government is and isn't doing about it. Then, perhaps lending some government insight into that situation and other situations, we will have Marwan Tabara in studio. The Kitchener South Hespler MP will join us to talk about all things Kitchener, all things Ottawa, and what the fall session at Parliament Hill might look like and what issues might be debated. But first, President Donald Trump announced a new direction for the U.S. war in Afghanistan, now almost 16 years old and counting. Despite his repeated campaign promises to, and I quote, get the hell out of Afghanistan.
Sorry.
It's
true.
It seems that Trump is going with what the wonks have described as Obama light.
Yeah, I actually watched the announcement. It just happened to be like, and now an announcement from President Trump. And I was like, oh, you know, it won't be. And it just kept going and going and going. And he commented this week at his rally about how, didn't I look presidential? He sort of did because he stuck to the script.
Yeah.
Although there was a couple of times when he...
Book report Trump.
Yeah, when he called the terrorists, frankly, losers, he was leaning. I think that was maybe one of his only freewheeling lines. But yeah, it sounds like he studied everything in great detail. I'm not sure what that involved. Maybe watching the Afghanistan story on Netflix or something. Great detail and no real plan. There was some numbers floated around as a possibility of an increase in the troops. When he started out, I thought, oh, you know what? He's gonna say they're pulling out because, of course, that is what he's been saying all along. And he just does whatever. No. This was it sounds like a committee sat down and came up with something resembling a plan and told him what to say. It's like, this is what we're actually going to do. And it sounds like they're going to win. Long story short, they're going to win.
Well, they had
winners.
Basically, they had like a big tete-a-tete at Camp David with all the national security advisors and the vice president. Interestingly, this came on almost the immediate heels of the firing of Steve Bannon, which we're not getting into this week. But
no.
I mean, it's kind of important because if we're talking about the voices around Trump that were of the get the hell out of Afghanistan camp, definitely Bannon was one of the loudest. He's, of course, very anti-globalist, very anti-interventionist. Mm. So it's interesting that Bannon is gone on Friday, and then Monday Donald Trump comes out and basically commits the United States to pursuing what has been the exact same foreign policy of the last several years, despite the fact you got, you know, Republicans like Lindsey Graham come out and say, like, oh, he's taking the gloves off. And it's like, the gloves were off. And to sort of demonstrate that further, this doesn't have anything specifically to do with Afghanistan. But there are people who track these things. And this is from Air Wars, who's a UK-based outfit of mostly former investigative journalists who, you know, have experience tracking these things. Alleged civilian casualty events, which is kind of a clean and precise way of saying incidents where United States military operations accidentally killed civilians.
Friendly fire, yeah.
Right. There were 855 in Obama's last 29 months in office versus 1,196 in Trump's first seven.
Wow, I didn't realize it was
so,
that high.
Yeah, if the gloves weren't off before...
Yeah.
I don't want to know what gloves off looks like, because I have a feeling like maybe the mother of all bombs is going to come out for a reprise or something.
Well, and that's the problem, too, is that the potential is there for that to happen. Now, what was the peak? The peak was 100,000 troops in 2010, 2011. They're down to about 84, 8,500, something like that.
Yeah.
It's expected that 4,000 more troops will move in. And at this point, it's almost as if I wouldn't say the number is completely irrelevant as to what's going on, but whether it's 100,000 or 10,000 or whatever, they still have the ongoing issues, like you say, about people, civilians in particular, being killed. The Taliban is still there. The Taliban still control a vast swath of Afghanistan. What was also mentioned and brought up was Pakistan has become a new... I would say target, but Pakistan is now on the radar, not quite in the crosshairs yet. Trump seemed to be blaming Pakistan for the back and forth of Taliban and other terror groups. He indicated 20 potential terror groups and threats, and he sort of, he didn't imply, but he said they were back and forth across the porous border, hiding there. I don't think that's the only place they're hiding. I think a lot of them are hiding in plain sight if they're controlling, huge chunks of the country. I didn't really hear any response from Pakistan on that. Did you catch any?
The president or the prime minister of Pakistan was not obviously well pleased about hearing that. It was kind of like generic, sort of like, hey, we're trying to help you out and, why are you attacking us kind of thing. And I think Pakistan's in a position of not knowing what to make of it, as so much of it is, and so much of the situation in terms of Trump foreign policy or Trump any policy, period, because, he gets up at his campaign rally on Tuesday and says, we're going to shut the government down if they don't pay for the wall. And then a little while ago, Sarah Huckabee Sanders says, there's no danger of shutting down the government over the wall. So, like, who do you believe, the president or his president spokesperson? I think that a lot of that's going on insofar as foreign policy. Let's preface this, of course, by saying that Pakistan is not a little lost lamb. Certainly a number
nuclear
of...
Yeah.
Well, yeah, they're a nuclear power.
Yeah.
But certainly they've had no problem, if not outright harboring, high-profile Al-Qaeda or Taliban members, certainly in playing it cool as these people went about their business. There was this man, Taliban chief Mullah Akhtar Mansour, who was killed a couple of years ago, but he was traveling hither and yon wearing or with a Pakistani passport under an assumed name. And it's also true that the Obama administration was, to an extent, playing hardball with Pakistan as well, withholding, a couple hundred million dollars in aid, whether that's, straight up humanitarian aid or military aid. The U.S. gives both to Pakistan. I think Pakistan is the fifth or seventh biggest, I can't remember the exact number, recipient of foreign aid from the United States. This is just more sort of Trump bull in a China shopism, where it's just like, I'm going to, lash out at people and shake them up and, maybe it'll get them to behave. Because he also had the line about, we're making all the people in NATO pay more, which is completely false, because this is a NATO agreement that was reached before Trump had the idea to be president. But... So it's concerning because... there's obviously concern that Trump doesn't fully understand the bigger diplomatic foreign policy picture. So when he says, like, Pakistan better watch it, again, they're not an innocent in this. But, how are you supposed to take that as well is a question that Pakistan is going to have to deal with.
Yeah, because the way he framed it was like, India, our friends.
Yeah.
Pakistan, well, we don't totally hate you, but... there's these issues we need to deal with. The main thing with this is, you hinted it off the top, is that there was major campaign promise. Like, he was like, we're going to get the hell out of there. And that's like, oh, no, actually, we're going to stay. But it's fairly typical. But interestingly, speaking of Bannon, It sounds like Bannon left, went back to Breitbart, and immediately attacked Trump's Afghanistan
war
policy. Yeah, exactly. So that shouldn't really be a surprise. It sounds like that was in the, you know, you'd automatically slide back into the role that you had.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like he just showed up for a little while to do something, Bannon, I mean, and then just kind of evaporated like everybody else in that. The picture that's making the rounds, you know, everyone in this picture has been fired except for Pence, which you can't really be fired, although yeah. Maybe you can.
Well,
that's what he does. You're fired too. Like, it's just, it shouldn't
well,
be any
two words, Spiro Agnew. But,
well, yeah.
But, you know, Agnew was a victim of his own malfeasance, shall we say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is him going back on it is a flip-flop, and he acknowledged the flip-flop, and he said, you know, I've heard through my whole life that stuff looks different behind the desk of the Oval Office. It's like, yeah, well, what else is new? But so it is kind of a lot of people were patting him on the back for, you know, listening to the generals, and of course they seem to be the only people he listens to.
Because they have lots of flair, right?
Pretty much.
Flair and gold epaulets.
But it's so hard because he makes this speech where he's book report Trump and he stays on topic. Then he goes to his campaign rally where he frees the beast and free balls it.
Unleash the power.
And then he goes back and talks to veterans the next day, and it's back to the book report Trump tone. And it's, you know, so what version are we to believe? And we'll get we'll get into some of that when Marwan Tabar gets here, because he also talked about free trade. But the key thing is he's also playing up something he did promise during the campaign, which was being Mr. Unpredictable, because he did not announce how many troops. You know, the 4,000 number's been kicked around.
Yeah, but it's not official.
But it's not official, nor is when this is going to start, nor is what are the deadlines, nor is what are the goals, nor is the definition of success in Afghanistan. Is the definition going to be like there's going to, you know, no new Taliban assaults, no new Taliban attacks, you know, forcing the Taliban to come to the table and negotiate a peaceful settlement? You know, what does it look like? And so all we're left with is, again, this idea that it's Obama light in terms of the direction in Afghanistan. And people seem to be okay with that because it was a plan that didn't go full Trump in terms of presenting anything terribly crazy or out there in terms of, you know, perhaps what people might expect from Trump at this point.
Yeah, it sounded like the official goal from the book report is honorable and enduring outcome, which means America wins, right? That's not even code. That's their way of saying the honorable outcome is that we win, you lose, we don't need to do anything anymore. Oh, and by the way, we're probably going to get all your natural resources, which is...
Or it's the new way of saying peace with honor, which was the buzz phrase when... They were talking about getting out of Vietnam, mm-hmm. and we all know how that ended.
Not even peace in our time. Just keep pounding. So, will they? Yeah, he spoke for about a half an hour, and like I said, I listened pretty closely, and it was like he hasn't really said too much.
No,
like there's a plan. It's like the old "I have a plan," but then what is it? Well, we're gonna do this. When does that start? Oh, I don't know. We have to build the timetable, and we need to strategize, and the conditions need to be right. It's like, well, okay, but you know, it would almost have been more effective if you just said, yes, we're pulling out, or we're gonna send 500,000.
Well, on top of it all, there isn't even an ambassador in Afghanistan right now, and I couldn't find if there was an ambassador in Pakistan for that matter. And you know, if we're talking about opening up new fronts within this and or taking new approaches in terms of how Pakistan's dealt with, there's to my knowledge, there's no U.S. ambassador there right now either.
Yeah, because he had said about we may end up working with the Taliban, or the new government may involve Taliban people. I mean, that's stuff that an ambassador would handle. Mm-hmm. Right. Or the diplomats, those channels, as opposed to the strictly bombing channels. So he was hinting at it, but they're just saying there's no ambassador. It's like,
Well, they have named somebody, John Bass, who is presently the Turkish ambassador.
Oh,
so
industry rep who seems to be the most common.
Well, I mean, he's someone
who's
who's
made money in coal. Yeah, send him.
Well, he's it's it's not even that. He's someone who's actually held a lot of diplomatic posts.
Well, that's who you want, it's, right, I guess.
So it's someone who is more ideally... more ideally suited to this than the woman who was recently sworn in as ambassador to Canada, who was, you know, a crony appointment if there ever was one. But I will say, at least with Bannon going, Bannon was also apparently the proponent of this idea of basically turning over security in Afghanistan to Blackwater and having, you know, making Eric Prince viceroy of Afghanistan.
Because that worked so well,
you know, well, it's,
in Iraq, right?
Well, talking like it's some sort of Roman territory back in, you know, like the turn of the... The turn of the common era.
Monthly reports.
Viceroy Prince, you must go to Afghanistan and look after it for the emperor. But no, it's...
It will make lots of money.
But they were talking about, like, private air forces and, you know, 5,000 mercs in country. And it's like, you know, people aren't already aren't accepting the guys in the official uniform. What makes you think they're going to accept, you know, the weekend warrior guys and khakis and polo shirts?
I think the insurgency would probably get worse if that's possible.
Well, especially since, you know, we're talking about people. I mean, it's not even called Blackwater anymore because Blackwater gave itself two black eyes over the years. So it's, you know, if there's
name changed, owned by an equity firm now or something, probably. I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a name I haven't heard in a while, actually. But
yeah, because, you know, they have to watch their nose now. They
Whitewater. I don't know.
Anyway, let's talk about Canada stuff, refugees. So presently, there's a situation on the border of Quebec and New York. Literally thousands of people, mostly Haitian, coming by bus, by train. It's plane, trains, and automobiles. Maybe not the plane part, but definitely taxis and even on foot. The number is 3,800 as of August the 15th, and that is just August, versus almost 3,000 in July alone. And this has kind of been steadily going up up until this, but there's certainly been a boom in the last couple of months in terms of the number of people coming over the border. Like I said, they are mostly Haitian. Most of them are looking at they have temporary protected status, which they received after the Haiti earthquake, that huge earthquake in Haiti. I think it was in 2011.
2010. Yeah.
So their temporary status expires in January 18, and I'm not sure if there's anything official in this regard in terms of whether or not their status will be renewed, but they seem to be under the impression that it's not going to be renewed. So they're kind of flocking to Canada. And it seems to be at least in part because of certain somebody's tweet back in January.
Yep. Yeah, they seem to be coming on the basis of a rumor. It's not solid yet. And it's almost that whole freedom train thing to like go to Canada and everything will be all right, which isn't necessarily the case. Now, of course, because of things like the Safe Third Country Agreement that we accept them, they're processed as... I want to say refugees, but not necessarily. What's the category?
Right.
You should know this. And then...
we know exactly. What you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, sorry. Well, refugee board hearing, right? They have refugee board hearing, and then it's decided. But Trudeau and others have said that there's really no special advantage. They'll be treated the same as somebody else. Oh, asylum. Applying for asylum.
So, right.
And it sounds like statistically 50% of people that apply for asylum get it. It's possible that they're under the impression as well that maybe with the Syrian situation, with so many people coming in that instance, there may be a bit of a false impression going around. It's like, oh, well, you just go to Canada and everything's going to be great and they'll feed you and give you a house and this and that. And that's not necessarily the case. You're either staying straddled in Peak or you're staying in a tent in Cornwall. It's not all it's cracked out to be. The weather's nice now. That may change. It will change. We know it will change for a fact. And it sounds like they sent, Emmanuel Dubourg? He's acting as a special, not special ops, but as an ambassador, I guess, down to Miami.
Special envoy.
To speak to the Haitian community in Miami, which is quite large as well. In Quebec, I think it's about the size of Guelph, like 120,000.
Yeah.
Not quite double that, but close in Miami. So I think it sounds like our government is getting into the community and saying, look, you know what? You really need to clarify what's going on here, that it's not milk and honey up north.
Well, it is, but you know, you may getting the milk and honey is not as as easy as perhaps you've been told.
Yeah.
DeBorg, of course, is himself of Evasion ancestry.
Yes.
So I guess the assumption is he can talk to his people in his language. On top of all that, I've been kind of watching the coverage of this, and there are some people that want to make hay of this, and we'll get to that in a sec. But I have been forced it myself to wonder if there is some kind of operation here, because it seems like it's a little too easy for all these people to make the journey across the country to come to this exact same point in this exact same crossing.
You're saying like the Mediterranean smugglers, it's like, or coyotes are
something like that. I'm wondering if there's maybe some kind of industry behind it too, mm-hmm. with these people. It's like, your status is uncertain. Let's take you somewhere where you're going to be secure for another couple of years. Like,
just give me $2,000. Yeah, yeah. Probably.
Yeah.
Unscrupulous types. And that wouldn't be a surprise because it is... There is a hint of the orchestrated to it. It isn't just, you can understand leaving an earthquake in Haiti, you leave or try and go somewhere where you can. But this is a bit more, that's an interesting theory. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was proven true to some degree, maybe not for everybody.
But I mean, if it was spread out,
just some guidance,
like across the border, right?
Yeah.
If you have people like the 1,000 islands, trying to get across, or out of Manitoba, where it's nice and flat and open and the weather is nice this time of year, there's no danger of having your foot sawed off because of frostbite or anything like that.
Yep.
It seems to be concentrated at this mm-hmm. crossing in Champlain at the end of this dead end street.
So, that's good. I wouldn't be surprised if that comes to light. So, of course, this is also driving, what was I going to say? We're going to talk about Lamute as well.
Yeah.
Lamute. Is it too early to talk? Yeah, I guess we can talk about
It's never too early to talk about the alt-right.
It wasn't specifically this event. I don't think, they didn't have their rally in Quebec specifically against this, did they? But of course,
no.
We've tied the two together because there's obviously a link. Lamute, translation, the wolf pack. And they claim that they're not racist necessarily. They're definitely anti-Islam.
Right.
But the imagery that they use, which is the white wolf paw on the black background, and also the fact that they have a clan system. Now, there's an unfortunate choice of name for your little wolf cub pack, the clan system, who interact with each other. It sounds like there's quite a few people involved, and there was a march on the weekend that, mm-hmm. and well... The sigh. I'm sighing about it because I was about to say ended in violence, but it got kind of weird. It wasn't right. The usual. There have been other right-wing, white power-ish marches in Canada that were shut down. There was one in Vancouver where they planned to march, and enough people showed up, and it was shut down, and there was no... I'm looking for another word instead of saying violence, but I mean, there were things that went on
friction.
In Quebec. Friction.
Let's say
that
friction.
That we normally expect in Quebec. The windows get broken. There's a flaming dumpster. There's this and that. We've seen it in the student marches and other marches. I think people in Quebec know how to, present themselves at a march.
They know how to agitate.
Yes.
It's bizarre because, we had the same thing in Boston where that was another place where the white pride seemed to get shut down because of the overwhelming number of people who came out for the opposite side. The reason why the Quebec is different is because the wolf pack seems to be, and I'm going to call them wolf pack because
just call them wolf pack,
it sounds
sure.
sillier, but
Mute.
They've got the moral high ground on this because they what the police did was immediately sort of take them away, and they spent like 4 hours in a parking garage, but then the police eventually took them up to the convention center above the parking garage where they were able to be in air conditioning and able to mull about and able to use the bathroom and that kind of thing, while the more left-wing anti-protesters were sort of outside with this kind of like, let us at them kind of attitude. So
mm-hmm.
if anything else, the wolf pack comes away after this with the moral high ground. Like, we were just trying to march and to demonstrate. And
it's not really the moral high ground. They looked better on camera. This is the thing.
When that's everything.
When you've got the leftists, the agitators, whoever it is, some guy in a bandana smashing Global's TV's camera.
Yeah.
Does not look good, because if you go after the media, then they're obviously going to portray you as somebody who's, you know, anti-media and the negative aspect of this. And they arrested Jaggi Singh was on the bullhorn. They arrested him for crossing some sort of line. And then they let him go hours later, no charges in that. But of course, all anybody sees is the takedown. And of course, he's struggling. And it's like,
yeah.
And it makes it out as if these, let's call them the left side, the wolf pack and the left side, the anti-racist marchers were somehow agitators. And I don't really think that that's the case.
Mm.
And then, of course, the wolf pack come out of the garage and they just have their march. And it's like, and, you know, winner gagnant in the presentation of things anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, if you look a little bit deeper, if you scratch the surface of the wolf paw, it's like you see people with questionable tattoos and...
Right.
No, we're not racist. We just don't like Islam and we don't like Muslims. And that fight, it turns out that fight against the Muslim cemetery,
yeah.
A lot of the people, I'm saying a lot, at least five of the people involved... were bona fide Wolfpack members. Now, is it coincidental that they would be active in this, trying to fight against this, or is it just is Quebec crawling with this Wolfpack now?
Correct. And for people who don't know, there was a mosque in Quebec City, oddly enough, the same mosque that was attacked back in January,
yes.
Was trying to secure a Muslim burial ground because Muslims have their own cultural imperatives, one of which is that they have to be buried rather immediately after mm-hmm. death.
Yep.
Which most, you know, Christian or secular graveyards can't accommodate, you know, especially on something like a long weekend, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been trying to get their own burial ground for years. And yeah, it turns out some of the people standing in the way were wolf packers. On top of this, after they were allowed to march, they were talking to some of them about why they were out. And I did read one quote that interested me. Somebody said, "White people have been replaced in Montreal."
Oh.
And when you hear that, you can't help but think back to the Vice video of Charlottesville,
with
the guys chanting, "You will not replace us."
And the Vice video also had a couple of members of La Mute who were speaking to, I think it was the beginning.
Christopher Cartwell, yeah.
It doesn't say in the video that they belong to this group, but it came out later. And supposedly they've been suspended from the wolf pack.
There's a scene scene from the beginning of the video where he's talking to other people who've gathered, like, "Where did you come from?" And then one of the says, "Oh, I came from Canada." And he's like, "Oh, Canadastan." And it's just like, jeez. But
and of course, the guy from that's been arrested now, right? Is that
he is being held without bond?
Oh boy,
yes. I think. What is the chart? I think it has to do with it has to do with using pepper spray against one of the counter protesters. Yeah,
and this is better than the left.
there are a couple other couple of charges, but yeah, he's being held without bond now.
Oh,
presumably he is very sad.
He's crying. He's probably crying.
Well. Yes.
Just like 1945. But anyway, that's another story.
And speaking of other stories, we will have one after the break. We will welcome Marwan Tabara in, and we're going to talk about some of this and some other things going on in the news. So stay tuned for that, and stay tuned for some music. And we'll come back after that. You're listening to Open Sources here on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio.
From their 2004 album, Funeral, that was the Arcade Fire with the song Haiti. So
on the nose, Scotty.
Got it.
As always.
Got it. I try.
And we're pleased to welcome to our little studio here, Marwan Tabara, MP of Kitchener South Hespler. Your first time on our show, and we thank you for coming by today.
Thank you for having us.
And I know it's you know, we were talking during the break. You are a very busy man these days. You can visit your Twitter feed, and here you are at a powwow. Here you are at a barbecue. Here you are at a graduation. It seems like you have been. This has not been a summer vacation for Marwan Tabara. It's been a very, very busy time with your constituents.
Yeah, correct. It's been busy for all of us. A lot of representatives, a lot of MPs, whether you're in municipal politics, provincial or federal, we represent the communities that we live in, and we want to ensure that we're as many places as we can, meeting as many constituents and understanding their issues, concerns, and just being part of their community.
Mm-hmm. I did note the powwow in particular, because that was the first of its kind. And, you know, how did you enjoy being part of a powwow? And what went on at the powwow? Because I think that's a term we're kind of familiar with just from First Nations culture. But it's probably something not a lot of people know what happens at.
Yeah, actually, just before I came on the show, someone put something on Facebook, and I replied that it was a fantastic event, and I want to thank all the volunteers and organizers that did that first event. So that's the first powwow ever in Hespler in Cambridge. So it was excellent. It was very well attended. I had the honor of being in the opening ceremonies, and it was just fantastic seeing everyone there. And it's important to know our heritage and a lot of the cultures that First Nations still embrace, and we want to encourage that and make sure that future generations understand our past histories.
Mm-hmm. Now that the pleasantries are out of the way, I did want to get your take on some breaking news today. And, you know, you may not have had a lot of time to study it, but I mean, and especially since it kind of didn't involve you at the time, since you weren't in government yet. But Senator Mike Duffy has announced that he is suing the federal government and the Senate for $8 million because of all that happened, let's say. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, today I just briefly saw the headlines. I didn't look into it. Well, that's between it's going to be between the courts. That was something that was done previously under the previous government, and it's really up to the courts to decide this now. And you know, he can make a claim, and I think it's up to the courts to decide.
Hmm. Between the three of us, though, and whoever might be listening,
and hundreds of audiences, yes.
But I think a lot of people might be wondering, you know, if you know, what would you know? It seems a bit, I don't know what, but you know, to sort of bring all this up again, it seems so, I don't know, tactless, or I don't know what the word is, but it just, you know, this was a pretty divisive thing that happened, and a lot of people weren't on his side to begin with. And I think a lot of people are probably not relishing the idea of reliving it again in another court proceeding.
Yeah, I think maybe the public is not happy with to see this go to court again. But, you know, this is something that between Mike Duffy and the courts, he filed for this lawsuit. So it's really out of our hands. It's kind of his way of dealing with things. I think maybe he has a different perspective. That maybe some people may not see the public, but it's up to the courts to decide, and I'm pretty sure that they will do a good job. I have faith in the courts. So.
Another bit of breaking news today: your colleague Judy Foote is stepping down from Parliament due to personal issues. Do you know her fairly well, or you worked with her at all?
Well, most of the MPs, you know, within caucus, within when we're in House duty within Ottawa, we have little bits of chats here and there. And I sat during question period and in House duty, sit with Judy Foote and just talk to her, you know, how our family life's going, et cetera, how work is going, and maybe ask her something if I have a specific question in her department. But I think she has some family commitments that she may need time off at this time. And it's unfortunate to lose someone, especially in cabinet, with a lot of her experience and a lot of her mm-hmm. knowledge.
Yeah, twice breast cancer survivor, too. So she's definitely an impressive lady, and it's mm-hmm. sorry to see her go. I was about to segue into something horrible. What dirt do you have on Lloyd Longfield? But I'll leave it there. we wanted to get your perspective as a member of the government on some of the ongoing issues. We just had a conversation about what was going on with the at the border and the, mm-hmm. and the refugee situation. And certainly your leader, the Prime Minister, has taken some heat for it. And from your point of view, what has the government response been like to this situation, and has it maybe gotten a bit away from you in terms of how big it's gotten?
Well, first of all, I sit on the Citizenship Immigration Committee, and I do understand the value of immigrants that come to our country and how they've helped build. We've all been, whether it's, you know, 5 years ago or 100-plus years, we come from immigrants. And we helped build this country. So what's happening right now in terms of the influx of asylum seekers that are coming to the borders, we have the CBSA, Canada Border Security Agency. We have RCMP on the ground. We have the Canadian Forces. And we have immigration officials on the ground ensuring these processes. So these are asylum seekers that are coming over from the U.S. border, and they're claiming asylum here in Canada. They will have a process that they will go through. We go through a rigorous process when they come in. We encourage that they come through legally through a point of entry. Unfortunately, that isn't happening right now, but we strongly encourage that. There's biometrics checks that go on, criminal checks, health checks that agencies are doing right now. So we have a lot of resources that are on the ground right now tackling the situation.
Is there concern that those resources are being overwhelmed?
No, they're not being overwhelmed. They're, even in Montreal, they've opened up another whole floor to process a lot of these migrants, because majority of them are going to Montreal. Mm-hmm. So we have resources in place to handle the situation.
Given your committee assignment, when you get back to work in the fall, back in Parliament Hill, mm-hmm. is this going to be something coming your way and coming your committee's way in terms of maybe changes to make or maybe immediate solutions to the situation to try and stem the flow over the border?
Yeah, that's a decision for the committee as a whole. I'm just one member on the committee, so that's a decision that the committee as a whole would make once we return back.
I think people are kind of looking at the Prime Minister as maybe, if not wholly responsible, but at least, you know, his statement in terms of, you know, we welcome people from all places, and kind of the feeling that, you know, Canada is here and ready to welcome you. Looking backwards, hindsight being 2020 and all, could that have been maybe... I don't know, handled better? You know, do you think maybe he was a bit too, I guess maybe the sunny ways were too sunny in that regard, that there's a very real possibility that his message, although fairly optimistic, was maybe misconstrued as like, the door's open, come on in?
I don't think that was the message at all. I think, you know, there's been a lot of... If you take in Europe, there's been a lot of migrants that have been coming, obviously, from Syria, Iraq, and North Africa. And in Europe, and especially in the European Parliament, there's been it's been pretty divisive in mm-hmm. how to handle this large influx of migrants coming over. A lot of MPs within Europe would say that, yes, Europe, a population of 500 million, or the European Union, a population of 500 million, can absorb some migrants coming over with that number. In terms of Canada, I think we're a welcoming nation. We understand that diversity is a source of our strength, and we've seen that, as I mentioned, of how immigrants help build this great nation that we live in, help build our communities, our cities. right now we're ensuring that that we do have protection on our borders. We have a process that we go through when asylum seekers come to our borders. We have a process that we go through, a rigorous process, to ensure, number one, to ensure the safety for all Canadians. We want to ensure that any of these asylum seekers, if they do come, that, you know, they have background checks, criminal background checks. And just to point out, the asylum seekers that have been coming over, there's been either 1% or lower that have had a certain criminality and were sent back. So it's very rare that you see someone that's having a criminal record or some kind of a threat to the public.
Would you say then that perhaps the concerns are overblown?
I wouldn't say overblown. I think Canadians, you know, there's some concern with the influx of asylum seekers that are coming through the borders, and you know, they have the right to ask questions, and I'm here to answer those questions and say that, you know, we have officials that are on the ground, like I mentioned, Canada Border Security Agency, RCMP, immigration officials, and Canadian forces to handle the situation. So when, and this is something that is not new. We've seen this in the past years and in other years, and we've seen spikes in people crossing the borders. And every year that the government puts in a certain amount of expected asylum seekers coming from the United States, and our levels plan projected that in I forget which year, but we put around 13. I think 11 to 13,000 asylum seekers that would be coming across the border.
Okay, well, I want to pivot to another kind of hardball topic, and it concerns certain people in the White House right now. Donald Trump, there is NAFTA negotiations right now, but we saw him at his rally on Tuesday saying, you know what, maybe I'll just tear up NAFTA. and I can't imagine how Chrystia Freeland and other people who are actually working on this on the level, the negotiation level, are maybe feeling about this. And maybe you can share a bit of insight in terms of discussions in caucus about the expectations the government has about where the negotiations are going, and maybe how seriously, when Trump kind of says off the cuff, maybe I'll tear it up, maybe we'll pull out. You know, how does the government feeling about NAFTA these days?
Well, to begin with, I'm just going to rewind a little bit and just talk about when Trump first was elected, we really sent a delegation down there to continue the ties, telling the current administration that, you know, we're here, we're one of your best trading partners. We want to continue a great relationship, and we want to ensure that we have we're creating jobs and maintaining the jobs that we have on both sides of the border. So that was done right at the election and prior to the election. As of now with NAFTA, in terms of, you know, him saying a statement, you know, we probably might, and the word probably might tear up NAFTA. those words, I think, could be, you know, maybe a strategy that the president is taking before negotiations to kind of show maybe some strength in the negotiations. But we understand that there's many jobs and the relationship needs to continue. And I think the administration, not only the president, but the administration knows that NAFTA is a good deal, and it ensures that we need to maintain middle-class jobs and a strong economy. We have $1 billion worth of trade. I think it's $2 billion that crosses the border each and every day. Yeah. So we want to ensure that we keep that trade.
How closely are sort of, I don't want to say regular MPs, but I will, regular MPs like you, you know, sort of kept in the loop on these things?
Quite a lot. We have, anytime we have questions about it, you know, we can speak to, we can ask ministers, official, or the Parl Secretary Andrew Leslie. This is part of his special assignment, negotiations with NAFTA and relations with the United States. He's readily available, and if we have any questions as MPs or our staff does, they're readily available.
Well, I want to talk about some local stuff, and I want to begin with the fact that you are an alum of U of G.
Yes.
How does it feel to be back?
Oh, it feels great. There's quite a bit of construction that has happened.
Oh, boy.
You've noticed.
Yes, yeah. Yes. The new, I haven't seen it yet, but I've driven by it, the new kind of statue of the griffin.
Right.
That's out there. That I haven't really stood by it, but I think right after I'm going to go and take maybe a selfie.
Yeah.
And just around the cannon has been changed just a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Johnston Hall has been kind of the same and the field. But it was great. I mean, every time I talk to a university student that's in my riding, I meet them at certain events. And or a student that is just about to go, they just finished high school and they're going to university first year, and they said that they're going to University of Guelph. I always tell them, you're going to love it. Not only just the university, but just the feel of Guelph. You know, it's very, I find the city just forward thinking, you know, has a lot of history with their agricultural college. It's very innovative with a lot of its green policies and really we're understand our impacts on the environment, and a lot of people in Guelph really taking into consideration to reduce our carbon footprint.
What else do you like about Guelph? No, I'm kidding. you took political science here, and yes. We were talking in during the break. You graduated in 2012. You were let's call you a mature student. So when you came here to do political science, are you kind of living the end game of that? Were you planning on making a run at politics then, or was this just something you're interested in?
Well, I'm going to answer this by quoting the mayor of Waterloo. He was just at an event where he was talking to young entrepreneurs that started their own business. They had a grant program from the province of Ontario, and they were able to start our own business over the summer, and they were explaining their explaining their experiences. And the mayor once said, he goes, you know, when I finished university back many years ago, I forget what he said.
But he's probably grateful he forgot.
But he said that there was a lot of people that had one particular job right after they finished university. They would stay in that job 25, 30 plus years.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the conditions kind of that we live in anymore, right? And he mentioned zigging and zagging it within your careers, right? He started in a different field and now he went into politics. So that's kind of, you know, what I went through a little bit. I started, as I mentioned before the show, that I went to London, took electrical engineering, went and worked out in the field as electrical apprentice, and then realized that I wanted to switch gears and realized that politics was my passion. And then that's when I came to University of Guelph. But I still took that experience with me, and, you know, it's helped me today in what I've learned, so.
Not many guys in Parliament, and I don't mean this as an insult, but there aren't many people in Parliament who have that working class background of being, you know, the being in the trades. It's mm-hmm. It's kind of unusual.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of it, is to get people from different perspectives, right? You know, there's quite a bit of lawyers that we have. There's individuals from different sectors, whether it's marketing, whether it's in business sectors. In health sectors, we get a lot of MPs from different backgrounds, and they're able to share that knowledge, whether it's in caucus or if there's a policy that comes in or a legislation that we have to vote on. We get a lot of their insight and expertise in that, and that really creates better policymaking.
You talked about why you love Guelph, and we appreciate that, but you're riding Kitchener South Hespeler. It's a new riding. So what can you tell us about that and maybe the difference from how Kitchener used to be arranged, riding-wise speaking?
Well, to start off, I'm an undefeated member in that riding. longest-serving member in that riding, just to point that out.
Work it, absolutely.
Undefeated. but it's a great riding. It's a town, or I shouldn't say town, a riding that serves to a lot of commuters. We see a lot of new families that are coming from the GTA because the cost of living is so high,
right,
that they're moving to the GTA and deciding to commute. So it's and also you might have in a household, you might have one spouse that works in, for example, in Waterloo, and another spouse that maybe work in Guelph, and the midpoint would be Kitchener South, and that's where they would kind of meet. So it's a very young riding with a lot of new families. We have Conestoga College in my riding as well, and a lot of also it's advanced manufacturing. Employs a lot of people. The high-tech sector is in Waterloo and Kitchener Center, but also you see a lot of the high-tech sector also in our riding as well.
Well, unfortunately, we are running out of time, so maybe just really quick, what's sort of one thing you want people to keep an eye on this fall and when you go back to work at Parliament Hill?
Just the continued growth within the economy. You know, we've brought the unemployment down from, it was 6.7% when we came into power. It's gone down to 6.3-6.4%. You know, we're doing the best in the G6, so continuing to support the middle class, continuing job growth, and growing our economy.
And if people want to reach out to you, how can they find you on social media or email or what have you?
Just go online, just Google my name, Marwan Tabera, MP, and you can find my website there. Or you can email my office if you need anything, marwan.tabera@parl.gc.ca.
Well, we thank you so much, Marwan Tabera. Thank you for joining us today, and good luck heading back to Parliament Hill in the fall.
And thank you for having me back on campus. It's great.
No problem. And we'll let you get that selfie done with the Griffin. It is a Guelph requirement, I think. That's it for us this week on the show, Open Sources Guelph. We will have Guelph Transit GM Mike Spicer on the show next week. So if you have a transit question with the realignment and everything that's happening, send those to us and we will ask Mike Spicer. And then we will have James Gordon, Ward 2 counselor, friend of the show, on September 14th. You can find all our stuff, opensourcesguelph.com, Open Sources Newswire on Facebook, @OS_Guelph on Twitter, and you can find this in past episodes on Guelph Politicast, on the Podbean, iTunes, and Stitcher channels. You can find me at Adam A. Donaldson on Twitter, or you can go to guelphpolitico.blogspot.ca.
Scotty Hertz on Facebook, Scotty Hertz on Twitter, and I blog at blogspot, WordPress. It's been so long since I looked at it. Stuff coming, though. Maybe a foreign report, too. We'll see. .com.
Tease. Good tease. And you can just stay tuned for DJ Sounds Good to Me here at the top of the hour on CFRU 93.3 FM, CFRU.ca, Guelph Campus and Community Radio. We will be back here next Thursday at 5 p.m. for more Open Sources, and we will see you then.